Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
Well, it's time for Total Education Q&A, and it's been a couple weeks. HiltNet, South Carolina, I've been. But guess what? Maggie Stevens' wedding anniversary is tonight, and she said, I can't be on the show. But luckily enough, Jared is going with the Total Education Network a little bit more than just one day a week. Everyone loves his great. So I said he'd be the perfect Q&A sub. So I want to welcome Jared to the program. And now, Jared, you're going to be thrown to the wolves even in a different show because you've never been on the Q&A show. So, Jared, how are you?
I have not. I'm very eager to see what the show is about and what we'll be doing. And I'm doing fine, Neil. So, I'm doing really well.
So when I to come back on to the in a more full-time basis with the Total Education Network is fantastic. It's such a great pickup for us because we just really utilize your expertise in so many ways. So that makes me very happy. Now I guess we got to get you to start tweeting and doing all those other things because the power of Twitter is amazing. So we're going to go to education.com tonight because, by the way, Jared, Maggie gets letters from parents every week that listen to the show. It's amazing our fan base of Q&A. I mean, we have the most interesting parents' questions. So I hope that maybe I will invite you on with Maggie, and I can listen to both your expertise, and you can see what's going on. But I'm just going to go to the questions from families from education.com because I don't have all the great questions that other people put on. And trust me, these are going to be interesting. These are all recent questions coming from education.com, and they're kind of weird. And I think you remember them the first time we did it on the Total Education Hour, don't you? Where
absolutely. You know, parents and caregivers, they always have questions that may seem a little bit, may seem out of the ordinary, but they're still very important questions and ones that really need to be answered.
Okay, so our first question comes from education.com, and I'm not going to say the mom's name because that's more about just the question. It says, what can I do with a 11-year-old stepdaughter who always argues and fights with my 4-year-old daughter? So it's, what can I do with my 11-year-old stepdaughter who always argues or fights with my 4-year-old daughter? Now, Jared, you are a behavior therapist. You understand these situations, and sibling rivalry is a huge thing. I see this all the time with Ava and Anastasia at 8 and 4. But I think that very interesting, the 11 and 4 mix. What strategy would you offer this family?
Well, you know, and this is what we speak about so much in behavior modification. Is do we identify simply the behavior and the changes that we want to see, or do we actually try to develop a cause for this behavior? You mentioned sibling rivalry, and there's no question that that exists. And now let's add the additional component to that of a blended family. I think that what this family is facing goes a little bit deeper than the traditional sibling rivalry. I think that we're probably seeing some issues related to the fact that there's a blended family here.
That's a great point. You're right. A blended family, that changes the dichotomy a lot because these aren't really brother and sister. They're brother and sister based on a relation, based on a marriage.
Correct. And you know, I'm sure that not so much with the 4-year-old, but with the 11-year-old, there is almost absolutely probably some underlying current, a foundation that is leading to this argument. Now, in behavior therapy, many people would say the why doesn't necessarily matter. The what is what matters. And so the what here is that they're arguing, that they're fighting, that the 11-year-old is not, it hasn't yet shown the capability to recognize that arguing with a 4-year-old is not a whole lot different than arguing with a 2-year-old. And many people would say that arguing with a near teenager is very similar to arguing with a two-year-old. So, but I do think that the reasons that are important, and that's where I differ from a lot of the traditional behavior therapists. If we go all the way back to B.F. Skinner and to even John Watson, they would argue that the why doesn't necessarily matter. It's the behavior that matters. But now when we can, you know, this is a long answer to a short question, but the parents may be able to react differently and not see it as my 11-year-old always. You know, that's the critical statement, always, the critical word there. You know, the parents, if they can just look at this from the perspective of their 11-year-old, may be able to remove themselves from my 11-year-old always does this behavior. So that's why I always ask parents to there's a reason these things happen, and the reasons do matter. Now, how do we address that? How do we start addressing that even after you've come up with the underlying reasons? May not be a whole lot different than having no reasons at all. So what I would say to these parents, or suggest, as I've always talked to, what I would suggest to these parents is that they start looking at the triggers. What are the events that lead up to the arguing? And I wish we had that family, that person right on the line with us, so that we could actually ask them those questions.
Well, what's so fun about the show is that the parents get to write in. And then, again, I have no questions this week, and I was throwing the wolves. Oh, you're back, Maggie said. And I said, hey, and I didn't even text her back off to say, I'm doing the show right now, Maggie. But you're right. The parents on our show most of the time are from our fans, and they really, what they're able to do is provide feedback that follows up on questions, and they listen to the answers. So they really gather information. When I'm looking at this, the first thing I'm going to say is the 11-year-old needs to grow the up. Okay, and this is a little different. We kind of, it's not our everyday advice show, Jared. I kind of really let them have it in certain ways. They got to grow up. That the 11-year-old is an issue. The 11-year-old should have the maturity to understand that you don't argue with a 4-year-old. Okay. Even I tell my daughter who's 8. This is just you have to have the maturity factor in that situation. What were you going to say, Jared?
No, keep going. You're exactly right. The 11-year-old, we would expect an 11-year-old to do that. And that is where I do think that the circumstance of being a blended family does really matter here. And that's why I think that this family is not seeing their 11-year-old doing this. That's where I do think the reasons matter. Because at that point, based on that email, the letter, the question that was sent to us, is, you know, what I'm reading into it is that the 11-year-old is not able to do this.
Exactly. So, and why the 11-year-old, this could be resentment, but having a conversation with a tweener that's very close to teenage years, you want to have that relationship, even if you're the step family, to have the conversation with her and say why this is wrong. Why that the 4-year-old does not really understand reality yet. The 4-year-old is just learning their environment, and you know right from wrong. You understand right from wrong, and you know better. And you know better that you need to be the leader of this family. Even if you don't like the person based on they were brought into this relationship, the conversation is first with that 11-year-old. Then secondly, then you have to have the conversation with the 4-year-old in more kid terms. It's about, it's not nice to be mean to your sister-in-law. It's your sister. And even say, it's not nice to be mean to Sissy. You have to be nice. So there's a different conversation, a more mature conversation with the 11-year-old and the 4-year-old. I love the whole thing that you talked about, the antecedent and then consequence. Let's look at that antecedent and consequence in so many aspects and say, what's leading to these arguments? Is the 4-year-old taking an iPod and smashing it? We don't know. Are they
right? Is it responsibilities? Is the family is the 11-year-old reacting to different responsibilities? You know, why should I have to empty the dishwasher every night? Why can't she do it, he do it, the 4-year-old do it? So that's why I would see, now if we identify the triggers, so now let's say it's chores, responsibilities. Now we can present this to the 11-year-old. These are your responsibilities, and these are the 4-year-old's responsibilities. See, everyone in our family has responsibilities. Daddy cuts the grass, mommy, not to make gender assignments here, mommy cuts the grass and daddy does the shopping. What we want to show this 11-year-old is, and that's why identifying the triggers matter. And there always are triggers. You know, that there's always events that, as you said, the antecedent, what comes before, and then what's the behavior that we're
exactly
seeing. So now, if it's built around chores, ultimately this comes down to the 11-year-old talking about injustice. I don't like, that 11-year-olds rarely use the term, I don't like it. What they'll say is, it's not fair. And again, even as a therapist for older children, this is what I typically saw. And parents, when they can look at it and say, okay, when your child says they don't like something, or when your child says it isn't fair, what they're really saying is, I don't like it. And they're just seeing it as unfairness. And to their eyes, it is unfair. That's significant.
Exactly. So I guess the advice is basically first find out, have conversations with both of them, then find out what's triggering it, and then try to remove that type of a situation.
Or if you can't remove it, I mean, there has to be responsibilities. And this seems obvious to all our listeners. And that's why these simple statements are far more complex than what they appear. The simple answer would be, just tell your 11-year-old to stop it, knock it off, don't do it. It just won't happen that way. But now if we see it as, these things seem to happen with responsibilities, okay, let's show the 11-year-old, here's your responsibilities, here's my responsibilities, here's your step-sister's responsibilities. See, even 4-year-olds have responsibilities, not the same as yours, and not the same as mine, but we all have them.
Exactly.
Responsibilities or chores are just one element. It could be consequences. Is the 11-year-old being punished? And anybody who has listened to our show and the other capacities knows that I view punishment as the last resort, and yet as parents, even me as a parent, I tend to go to punishment almost first. It really should be the last resort. There should be all kinds of steps that happen before we resort to punishment. You're grounded. You don't get to talk on the phone. You don't get to play on the computer. Watch your favorite shows. All of those things are punishments. Other steps have to come before that. So is the 11-year-old seeing too many punishments, too many almost extreme consequences? Again, not being able to talk on the phone or text message your friends as an 11-year-old is an extreme consequence. To us, it would be welcomed, but to them, it's unfair.
Okay. All right, our next question is about to happen, I guess, unless we're about to take a break. And oh my, we are. You're listening to Total Education Q&A on the Total Education Network. Get back more with Jared, not Maggie Stevens. And I'm going to have a conversation with Maggie. I think that us three together would be a comedy of errors. We'll be back in just a moment. We're back to Total Education Q&A on the Total Education Network, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook. And if you went to the Neil S. Haley Facebook, you could see the fiasco that happened with my flat tire right outside Flatwoods, West Virginia, in Birch River, West Virginia, on the way from home from Hilton Head, South Carolina. Long day, and AAA, you dropped the ball. AAA dropped the ball not once, but twice with my car, again, when another car didn't start, and we waited 4 hours twice. I don't know if we should be using those services anymore. But I got to thank the tow truck driver in Pittsburgh. They at least were very apologetic, and it's not their fault. It's AAA does not use as many trucks anymore. Okay, so let's go ahead really quickly to our next question. And this one's great, Jared. It says, how do I discipline my 15-month-old son? And man, this is Jared. This is right up Jared's alley, because it's
15 months.
It's perfect. So my son's 15 months old. He doesn't listen when I tell him no. We all have dealt with those, Jared. He laughs at me. He smacks, throws things, and pushes us all to absolute limit. I don't want to smack, although at times I've smacked his nappy or his leg. I guess, I don't know what a nappy is. I don't want that to be an answer. It doesn't stop him anyway. He screams and shouts. He's cranky a lot, and nothing I do is good enough. I'm at wit's end with him and could desperately use some advice. And Jarrett, you go ahead, man. This is up your alley. I know I'm not going to agree with you, and that's what's going to be fun about the rest of the show. So give us how you would. Let's see. Okay.
There's been plenty of times I've been able to shed light on subjects for you, and for you to see the light and recognize that the advice that I'm giving really makes sense. First of all, let's identify the key phrase that she put in there, and that she let us know that it doesn't work anyway, meaning the corporal punishment, the reaction, it doesn't work anyway. That's the first thing that I would say to this parent if we were in a session. I'd say, boy, I like what you said there. Look what a great job you're doing. I would reinforce what she just said. You answered it right there. You said, it doesn't work anyway. So that's the element that I would focus on. I'd say, let's take out the things that aren't working. Telling your child no is not working. Let's avoid the word no. Doesn't mean that we let that child go and do whatever they want. We set up other ways to tell that child no. Child goes over to turn on the television at 15 months. You know, there could be a whole list of reasons the child does that. I'm bored. I want something to do. I want your attention. I want to see how this works. I like the reaction that I get. You know, here's what I say to parents when they say, look at them. They're laughing at me. They think it's funny. I'm like, I say, what do you think it would look like if we took a video of you and showed it? I said, do you think there is maybe a cartoon element to it? You know, is there kind of a funniness to it? The way your face turns red, your finger wags back and forth. Like, you know, we see this in cartoons and we kind of laugh at that. We see this out in public and we kind of maybe smile when we see it and say, oh yeah, I've been there. And wow, I wonder if that's what I look like. So two elements there. The child could be reacting, laughing, by saying, wow, mommy looks kind of funny, daddy looks kind of funny when they do that. The other element is that even at 15 months old, that might be the way the child copes with the anger that the parent is showing. You know, some children will cry and run away or hide. Other children are going to laugh, but each is to me a coping mechanism.
So how would you stop it, Jarrett?
Okay, so we've identified what's not working. The corporal punishment, not working. The saying no, not working. So let's take out the saying of no. Child goes over, the 15-month goes over to the television, starts to turn it on. You walk over, you stand in front of the television, or you pick up that child and move them across the room. And you continue to do this until that child gives up. And I have seen it happen every time. I've done it every time, 100%. I have seen the child give up before the parent. And this is what I say to parents. You can do this. It might take 10 times. I don't think it will, but it might. The point is that child is going to give up before you. They're either going to go to something else, I said, or they're going to fall on the ground and kick their feet and scream and yell. And I said, In either case, if that happens, you move on. If that child has their temper tantrum, provided the child is not hurting themselves or being destructive, then ignore it. Let it go. Walk away. Just make sure that the child is safe. At 15 months, this is much, much easier than the 11-year-old because you have a whole different set of circumstances that you have to battle with an 11-year-old. At 15 months, it's challenging, but it's much, much easier. So again...
Right. The planned ignoring is very important. And then, we're looking at the antecedent and the consequence of this 15-month-old as well. As Maggie Stevens, big, and I'm going to give her a plug because she really has been a great cornerstone to the show for so long, and I know our listeners out there are fans of her tremendously. She always talks about investigation as a parent expert, that as a parent we need to investigate before we react. We can't react to certain things till we have all of the evidence. Then we come to conclusions.
Yeah, I like that word, investigation. In our shows, we've always talked about planning, expecting what to expect. I think those words are almost interchangeable in the way that Maggie is using the word investigation. In a way, that's what we're saying. Investigate, find out, anticipate. Here's what I can expect. I know what's going to happen. When I tell my 15-month-old that we need to leave the playground, I know what's going to happen. There's the planning. Now we have a plan in place. What do we do to get the 15-month-old to leave the playground? What do we do when I have to give? Ultimately, what this parent is saying, Neil, is very basic, and that is when I give my 15-month-old restrictions, this is how they respond.
Most definitely. And I think that's the thing. So here's how I do it. I'm agreeing with you in the planned ignoring. I'm agreeing with certain things. At 15 months, you cannot ever spank. 15 months, just don't understand. I mean, my son Max, I have no idea how they have allowed free reign of this 15-month-old. First of all, that 15-month-old needs a pack and play. Secondly, a high chair. To have free reign at 15 months is just—it happens, Jarrett, but it's not the right way of parenting. A lot of times, if you're having that out of control son at 15 months, you have to come up with ways to make sure that they, when they do get upset, a lot of times they do the hitting and throwing things when they're tired, when they're hungry, because they're not able to communicate those things. First of all, so that's the first.
Right. That's exactly right. They're not able to regulate their emotions. They have the emotions. They're just not able to regulate them. They're not able to control them. You're absolutely right.
Exactly. So that's the first thing. The second thing is if we're getting to this and I tell him no and he laughs at me and smacks me, how hard is the smack? Is it really hard? I don't know many 15-year-olds that can do this. 15-month-olds, I've dealt with in behavior therapy 2.5-year-olds. Yes, they could be dangerous. They could crack your head open. They could do a lot of things. I've never heard of a 15-month-old that does any damage. So this is, again, just the mom feeling. That one thing that Maggie Stevens says, I'm quoting her a lot tonight, and I'll have to tweet that out on my Twitter because she is on Twitter. She's not on it all the time, but at least she has an account, Jarrett, hint, hint. What I go ahead and I say is basically that Maggie says it's very, very important is the parent needs the change, not the child. And from reading this letter, and I let my parents have it, I'm not like kid gloves like you, Jarrett. I say flat out, here's the deal. You need to change, not the 15-month-old. If he says, when you tell him no, you direct him by the hand and walk him over. And do you really think many 15-month-olds are going to listen more than 42% of the time or 30% of the time? It's not going to happen.
No, exactly right. And that is critical. The 15-month-old will change. The behavior will change. But, parenting a child who has many behavior challenges like I have done, my wife and I have done here, you know, it isn't easy. So I do identify with this parent, and I identify with all parents that are facing this. And I think that's what, you know, really helped me in my work is as a therapist, being able to identify where that parent was coming from. But you're absolutely right. And then let's go back to, you know, something else that I share, that I've shared many times on our shows, you know, is that, you know, what is the goal of parenting? And so many times, you know, let's look at it as discipline, as the word is intended. You know, discipline, disciple, and I've spoken about this a lot. It is to teach. I mean, that's the root of the word discipline, disciple, and that is to teach, not to punish, not to have consequences. When we are talking discipline, we are talking about teaching the child, teaching the employee, the employer. That's what we are looking to do.
Exactly. So let's go from there. And the word you said, discipline, just a little bit more of my advice for the parent is they have to change. They have to not get upset when you tell them no and he doesn't listen. 9 times out of 10, Jared, if we're using and telling I tell Anastasia no, and she's 4. She's not going to listen. If I direct her and say, please, I say something in not a negative tone, like, we don't do this, or feet on the floor, or let's walk over here now. No never works. And then if the situation occurs where they're laughing, that you overreact to a 15-year-old laughing. When he smacks, if you really think that's a big deal, you take the hand and say, nice. A 15-year-old doesn't understand right from wrong, and then throws things and pushes us all to absolute limit. What kind of patience do you have? That's another thing. You got to have patience. And then when they smack and nothing else happens, it just leads to screams and shouts because that child's lost complete trust in you. Why did mommy hit me? Why did daddy hit me? I did nothing except try to explain what I was trying to do. And a 15-month-old is not able to explain. Let me give you an example. Annika, who's 2. Annika really has 3 to 4 word phrases right now, Jared, but she can't really explain what she's trying to do. So a 15-month-old, unless they're a genius, is not going to explain why they're mad and angry at this point in time. So there's the thing. Redirection, very, very, to redirect, very, very important. And to make the changes the parent needs. So when we get back, 2 questions. Maggie and I knock them out more quickly, but Jared is showing that professionalism as the master teacher that he is to be able to do that in a very great explanation way and provide those suggestions. So what I think, Jared, is we need to take some of these questions from education.com and put it on our nationally syndicated show on Pittsburgh radio, and we maybe do that segment with you because you do a tremendous job. You're listening to Toll Education. You're welcome. You're listening to Toll Education Q&A on the Toll Education Network, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to Toll Education Q&A with Jared, and I was about to say Maggie Stevens, and myself, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor. TotalTutor.net.
Surprise.
So, yes, it's a man. TotalTutor.net and Twitter, Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook. And I'm telling you guys, go ahead and friend me on Facebook. You like writing to Maggie? Well, come on now. You got to friend me on Facebook. So let's go to our next question. 2 very interesting questions. I'll definitely tweet them out. Education.com. The day I did it, Jared, it was awful. But I feel like when I have you here, it's funny. So, oh my gosh, another question, but I've never heard of it before, but I'm not going to go to that. I'm going to go to this next question because, man, they're coming out even right now when you wouldn't even expect it. And that's what's so cool about education.com. And you're going to laugh at this one. And it's not laugh, but it's like, oh my gosh, we're going from kind of simple ones we've dealt with, but this might be not. My son was assaulted on school property as a result, and resulted in a fractured jaw. My question is, who files the police report? Let me read this now. The school police or the local law enforcement. He rushed to an emergency room, but no law enforcement has a report on file. How can this be if he was assaulted and resulted in a fractured jaw? Rushed to an ER by emergency transport, yet no police action. Interesting, Jarrett. We don't know the age of the kids, but it must be high school. It's a pretty scary thing, and this involves in topics in bullying and teasing. And I'm going to go and see if you can answer this. If you can't, I will tackle it. But what I'm hearing from this situation is what we're hearing a lot of is certain school districts are not stepping up when it comes to bullying. They don't want anything. They don't want to get their hands dirty. So they go ahead and allow someone else to handle it and sweep it under the rug at times because they don't want the publicity. Your thought?
Well, Neil, there's no question that this sounds like a cover-up of some sort, either a cover-up of the school district saying we don't want to have a recorded incident of this, which is ridiculous because the fact that the child had to go to the hospital is a record in itself. It could be that but the school district has a responsibility here, and I missed the did the person give the ages?
They didn't give the ages. So I think that the fact is what the advice we have to do. And I want to hear your advice, and I have some interesting advice as well, and I'm going to be attacking school districts, so be ready for that. And, Jared, I guess you can really start to even bring out your last name more and stuff now because of a change of careers. So that's a good thing as well. And now we can get you to be the superstar that you are and not just Jared. And I'm just so used to calling you just Jared because we wanted to make sure that certain
all the important people just go by one name.
Exactly. So you're just Jared. That's exactly true. All right. Okay. So continue with the advice.
I'm so important. I don't need two names. I just need one. Everybody will know just with that single name. So the ages here do matter. If we're talking 15, 16, 17-year-olds, this is significant. And it tells me that earlier in the show we talked about the child's ability to really inflict harm. Well, younger children can be incredibly harmful, but they usually don't have the strength to really show that much violence or that kind of destructive nature with violence. And older children do. It only takes one punch from a 15 or 16-year-old to inflict that kind of damage where, I don't even know if a 5 or 6-year-old could really do that. But, so it also matters with the ages, too, because a police report for a 9-year-old is not really going to make any difference. It might as well just be an incident report. But both do need to be documented. They do need to be there. We're talking a 15-year-old. Now it's significant. Now we're entering adult age here, and this is where the police report is significant. Even if it doesn't go any further than that, there does need to be documentation of this. And I agree with you, Neil. This is ultimately coming down to the school district not doing a very good job with bullying and violence prevention.
So let me go and attack this in a different manner. You're not offering as much of advice as just giving an investigation. When you listen to something like this, was assaulted on school property and resulted in a fractured jaw, we don't know if this happened in the gym, this happened in a classroom, and who files the police report. A lot of times when things occur on school grounds, okay, then the police are not involved a lot of times. This occurred in a situation where I was assaulted as a substitute teacher. A lot of interesting stories I have, Jarrett, and that'll be part of one of my other books of my days as a teacher, and a lot of the craziness was going on. But what I dealt with was I was assaulted, but they brought the police in. However, I could have been assaulted. They didn't bring the police in. They didn't write a report. All they did was suspend the student. Then no law enforcement occurred in this. So they don't even know if it was school police and I don't even think there's school police, if it was a security guard and they rushed him in the emergency room, law enforcement, unless they file charges against the other kid for hitting, that's not going to happen. It will never happen. So even if you – let me give you an example. They're playing on the playground. A fight breaks out. A melee, and his jaw is fractured. They have no idea which kid did it, okay? They send them, that then basically a report is filed by security guard, and then they go to the emergency room. The emergency room will say, oh, there was a fight that broke out in school. We don't know who hit the person, and that was it. You don't need to have police action unless they have witnesses that this fight did occur. So this is where I'm going at, and I think this is what happened. I kind of blame the school, but then I'm looking at the question more clearly. If she doesn't know this, then the school district is the one liable in this, ma'am. You need to get a lawyer and sue them, or go to the school and say, I want to know what happened. Because law enforcement's not going to get involved unless the mom files charges. Your thought, Jared?
That's a point that I didn't even consider. There may not be any way to file charges at this point. I don't know though if that's. I'm not exactly sure how the law works on this because I'm thinking about an assault with two adults. I'm not sure that it would depend on one party following through with filing charges, but I suppose that is most likely accurate because I think of issues of domestic violence, and that is dependent on the partner following through with charges. It does seem like that this parent has to do some things on their own to see this carried out, and maybe contacting the police is the way to go. Is the wake up call that the school will need to take this seriously?
Okay, our next question from education.com. Someone tell me where to buy books online. And this seems like a straight plug, and I'm going to laugh at this one. I was searching online books when I did a Google search, and I found a link telling me to buy books online through this online bookstore. I won't tell you it. That is the dumbest, but let's give some good ideas, Jared. What a ridiculous way to try to get a spam. So we should report abuse on this, and I am. I'm flagging this. I just flagged it.
what's really funny here is the fact that I use a computer, I have a tablet, I have a Kindle, but when it comes to Twitter and all the things you can access through the internet, I'm probably the person that would say, oh, I'd rather use the phone, go to the store. So I'm probably the last person to give advice as to where to get something online, because I'm the kind of person that's still upset that Borders has closed and Barnes & Noble is probably soon to close. I like the old bookstores that you went to and browsed around, picked up the book and held it in your hand.
So what's sad is people had four answers for this question, too. The other parents logged in. Hello, didn't you see this was a straight spam for them to go to that website? Well, here's my advice of buying books online. The Amazon.com is going to offer you probably your best deal possible because you can buy something for a lower cost. They can search and they can get any book at any used bookstore across the country. If you don't want a brand new book, they can get it for a great price. And you're gonna get the best shipping possible, and you're gonna get that book very quickly. So it depends on how quickly you want it. If you're searching for books, not hard to buy a book online. I think there are other places to go and purchase books, but I'd say Amazon is the best. And I think that if you want to go with resources, go to each publisher and do a read up on each one of the books. So, for example, if we're talking about a book that's written by, let's say, Pearson, then they're going to go and read all that stuff, or it's a certain author, things like that, and read the read ups and figure out, is this the right book for my child? Then purchasing it online is as simple as Amazon. You agree with me on this one, right? This
absolutely. You know, I buy my books. You know, here I am telling our listeners that I'm a person who preferred the old bookstore, but I have a tablet, and I have one of the things I love about it is having a complete library of books right at my fingertips that I can read multiple books at different times and not have to lug all the books carry all the books around with me. I also just enjoy bringing up the whole Amazon little bookshelf and seeing the books I've chosen, and then even having their suggestions on there. You know, so I'm constantly reading about parenting and child psychology and the reasons that we behave and the way that we behave. I find it very interesting, and the neat thing about Amazon is that it recommends books for you. You know, if you like this, here's some other things that you might like based on just preferences. So, I mean, it's, yes, it's marketing, but it's marketing that is actually pretty helpful. So, you know, you're right. That would be the best way for this person to go. As I'd simply say, go to Amazon or go to a site that they trust. I mean, I happen to trust Amazon, but you know, that was a great idea about going to the publisher and just finding out more about the book. That was one of the things that turned me off to online book buying, was that there was just so little feedback as to what the book was. The summaries were incredibly insignificant, you know, and so they weren't helpful at all. So that's a really good point that you brought out.
Absolutely, and so that's what we're looking at so far in the show, and it's amazing enough education.com was throwing these questions, but not enough parents are asking questions. So I recommend parents to just write to us, not education.com, and keep that going, keep the questions coming through Maggie Stevens, because they're very interesting. We've been able to keep it going through three segments, Jarrett, but I'm going to be interested about the fourth, and maybe we come up with a question ourselves to answer, because I was like, oh, cool, they're throwing me all these questions. Now they're getting goofy. You're listening to Total Education Q&A on the Total Education Network. We get back more with Jarrett, and it's just Jarrett. Not Jarrett somebody. He's got one name and everyone knows what it is. It's Jarrett. And we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to Total Education Q&A with Jarrett, Just Jarrett, and Neil Haley, the Total Tutor, TotalTutor.net for more information. And we're continuing the questions. When I see 33 days ago and 60 days ago and 55 days ago, it's really sad. And I make sure I ended up having to do all those questions one night, Jarrett, when Maggie bailed on me, and that was one of the most painstaking things I've ever dealt with in my life. And you only see buying books online. It just seems like parents aren't really caring about specific things today. So I think what we're going to do is handle some questions of things I'm dealing with my kids, because I think that's going to be entertaining for the last, and just ask Jarrett them, and how would you handle them? And the interesting story, and I guess I'm going to say it because now it's good news, is that Anastasia's pottying schedule kind of changed on vacation. And she had a few accidents. And
okay.
Number two accidents. So not a fun part of the vacation. However, we were able to get her back doing it regularly. It was a very strange way, but it was worth it because she was so bent that it was painful to go number two, we were able to figure this out. So if you had a child, let's throw Anastasia completely out of this because we fixed the problem. And I wouldn't say it's parenting 101, and I don't really want to get into it. But if you have a child on vacation that loses, it's like 4 years old, and through that routine loses the ability to go number two and has accidents, what would you do?
Well, let's start with what I wouldn't do. And as a parent, you have to, and I answer questions like this with many of the parents that I had experience with and was visiting them and had them in sessions. You know, there was a regression, and sometimes with their child, and it could have been a control thing. It could have been actually physical in nature. Like what you just said was that, you know, it was hard for her. She couldn't do it. It could have been nutrition related. I mean, there could have been the whole physically and that, you know, constipation issues. I mean, there could be a lot of things that, so what I wouldn't do is be angry with the child, even though internally, obviously, a parent is angry about this. It's not something that you want to do at 4 years of age, with a child of 4 years of age. But really avoiding the anger, the hostility, the blaming of the child, because here's what can happen next. The child could simply say, I'm not going to go anymore. And this sounds ridiculous, but it can happen. And what can happen then is your child can end up with really severe bowel and colon issues, and the extreme case that it would require surgery to be fixed. And I say that only because I've seen it happen. My experience has shown me that I have seen this happen with parents and their children, where the four-year-old has simply said, okay, fine, I won't go at all anymore.
And what happens then is just all comes out. And I explained that to everyone who didn't see that. And I saw it coming in a specific way. And I was a little angry because I knew she was just trying to test our patience in certain aspects. And a lot of times, if you you deviate from the situation anyway, and you stop being consistent about it, and you try to baby the person, you're going to run into the situation where I'm just not going to go anymore. Why? Because it hurts. And I could just, and I'll just go in my pants when it's time, or I'll run into the bathroom at 3 to 4 days. And what happens is it sometimes works. Most of the time, it doesn't work. So we got it back in a routine through some rewards and no consequences, but more rewards and extra rewards just to get her back into that routine again, and then we'll shape it away from that. But what I want to say, and I think that's a great point, is this happens a lot, ladies and gentlemen, and that I think that one of the things as a parent, if you're going on vacation, and that could be our next question, is consistency with bathroom time, consistency with meals. And if you feed them bad meals and you see a regression in their toileting, then you got to make some changes. And if you're seeing a regression in their diet, or maybe that time, too much time in the sun, as a parent, you have to look at what's best for your child in these situations and investigate the same way that you were talking about. And dieting a lot of times, so tell us, so some of these stories have happened on vacation that led to a longer period of time at happening then, it sounds like.
Yeah, no, and that's why I say to parents, you know, but more than anything, right, Neil, is that you nailed it, and that was you had a complete change of routine for her. I mean, this was just, you know, was completely different. So that was certainly another element of what you guys were facing as a family.
And I don't know if you hear the thunder and lightning in the background, but if my listeners are, don't worry. This is all about radio, and it's a fun radio as we're trying to make it through the end. And I know Jarrett probably won't be hearing it.
If we hear any freight train sounds, make sure that you get everyone down in the basement.
Oh, yes. Because of tornadoes. Exactly. And today it seemed like a tornado was coming when the wind was blowing like crazy. Okay, so that's one. Now here's another question that comes from me. Jarrett, what do you do when your kids refuse to listen on vacation, especially the car ride, Jared? 14, 12, 15 hours of HE double hockey sticks. What do you do? Because I'm telling you right now, of 31 hours of lost life in so many ways.
Multiple children, so you have this is multiplied exponentially with what I would face. Here's the first thing I would say is, if you don't have to take all the kids together, don't take them all together. So I would eliminate some of that to do. The other thing too is, and we all know this, but it's hard to do, stop a little bit more, try to find rest stop, you know, have a ball with you, have rest stops that you can get out and play in the grass, have limits there too. You know, when my alarm goes off, or when you see me starting to go towards the car, that means we need to get in and we have to get back on the road. But we stop to play here, you know, we'll stop and play again. But as an adult, too, we take the approach of, look, let's just get there. Let's keep driving. Oh, yeah, now I have the storm coming. So, you know, that's one way. There's two ways that we just said. If you can split up that ride, go ahead and do that. And if you can take breaks at the rest stops where the kids can get out and play. There's even a few rest stops that even have like playground equipment. There's not many of them, but there are some. And I know this when we drive to Rehoboth Beach, there's one that we stop at so that my son can go on a slide and swings. And that's nice too, because as a parent, you can just watch your child and you don't have to necessarily be right involved in the play, because as a parent, you need that downtime during that travel. So those are two ways to do it. The other way, too, is if you can ignore, go ahead and ignore any of the disagreements that could be going on.
The wife usually can't ignore it, Jarrett. And if you can imagine the expletives and the different things that occur and the absolute just hellacious trip of, I'm car sick, it's too hot, it's this, that, the other. And we changed one of the situations, which we thought, hey, this is the best situation. We moved Anastasia to the baby seat, meaning, and Annika went in the back with Aunt Ava. And it went pretty well until Annika started hitting Ava. This is a two-year-old. So the sibling rivalry, trust me, poor Ava having to deal with these little kids that literally, if they don't get their way, they're going to throw tantrums. And Ava does too. And that leads to the next question, Jared. And Jared's like, wow, he's just taking all his he needs airtime, so he's telling stories. And I can't wait to with Maggie next week to tell a few if I have to, but Jared's fixing some of it. But I absolutely believe this. You have to ignore this stuff. And that, and ultimately, I believe you don't travel in the day. You travel at night when they're asleep. I could have done it. Except if you have a situation where you have a flat tire in Birch River, West Virginia, and your tow truck driver doesn't come for 4 hours. Well, shout out to AAA again. And luckily this is not WWNL, so I could just rip it apart and not be considered not a Christian anymore.
Right.
Okay, so I could show my frustration and anger with AAA, and I told them flat out that if they better take care of me in some way, because they dropped the ball. I tweeted it out and they didn't respond, and I'm disappointed about that. But let's go back to the next question. This is the one that really is interesting. My 8-year-old throws, and this happens at home too, and I'm ready to set the standards that you're going to lose things. And I got a story for you about flushing the toilet as well. And so Jared's like, my gosh, Neil, managing 1,000 things. But let me just talk about Ava. Anytime doesn't get her way, and this has happened for about a year and a half, and I'm able to, she doesn't do it to me as much. She throws a temper tantrum at 8 years old. Is that something you've heard of a lot, Jared, and should we be concerned by that?
At 8 years of age, again, you're because you have multiple children, you're dealing with different elements. Her temper tantrums, again, could be related to restrictions. They could be attention seeking. Even if you feel like you're giving her a lot of attention, she could simply be saying, you're not listening to me. You know, you're not listening to me because you have to attend to other things. What I want you to do is listen to me. Again, you know, there's a maturity factor here. Yes, she's 8. Yes, she has so much more maturity and emotional control than her younger siblings, but she still is only 8 years of age. And she doesn't have, she's not yet having all the capabilities that we wish that she would have. Again, though, you know, we view 8-year-olds much differently than we do 4-year-olds or 2-year-olds. You know, out in public, you you see this and you're thinking, wow, these parents need to do something. And I'm sure that you're probably sitting there too saying, wow, people are looking at me saying, wow, this person really needs to do something. You know, it's really a difficult set of difficult circumstances. But, you know, should you be concerned? Well, be concerned with what you want to change. That's what I'd be concerned.
And I've told my wife about this, is that we need to change, not Ava.
Exactly.
And the reason is because there's something going on. And again, she wants to be the only child with three births in 4 years. That's a challenge
exactly.
for her. And that's a huge challenge in so many ways. And you know, when she was 4 years old, there was just her. Then came Anastasia.
Right.
And now Annika, then Max. And we're not going to say anything more, Jarrett, for you for now. But let's continue with the conversation. I just think that what I would say to Ava in a lot of ways is that I will give a – I mean, planned ignoring is not working because she knows everyone else is going to give in with her. I think that there has to be some sort of consequence for that age and that maturity for throwing a temper tantrum. So I will give the consequence because at this age, I said, you know, if you keep throwing tantrums, then maybe you don't deserve some of the privileges that we offer.
Well, and make the privileges related to what she's doing. And by that, you know, here's something that I did with my son, and I did not want to do this, and part of it came out of frustration. But I made the consequence associated with what it was that I needed him to do. So I'll get straight to the point here. He did not pick up his Legos. He loves Legos. He builds them, and he never wants to pull – I shouldn't say never. He doesn't like to pull them apart. You know, he wants to be able to keep all of them that he builds, and then you just can't do it. I mean, they would be – we'd have a whole house filled with Legos. So, you know, I set out what I needed him to do, which was, hey, buddy, you want to go swimming? Before we can go swimming, we need to put these Legos away. We need to put them into the baggies. And, you know, he wouldn't do it. He needed to keep all of them. And so here's the consequences that I established. And I said is, you know, look, I'm willing to help you on this because there's a lot. But, and I don't like to use the word but too many times with children because they know, even at 4 years of age, a child knows, oh, you hear the word but, and they're either going to laugh because it's the word but, or they're going to say, okay, here comes the no, you can't do it. And what I said to him was, you know, but you are not going to like the consequences if I'm the person that needs to put these away. So it wasn't a threat. It was actually saying to him, you are not going to like what happens with your Legos if I need to put them away.
And that's
the approach that you can take with your oldest daughter and let her know that, okay, I hear what you're saying, and I get what you're saying. Here's what I need you to do. And again, so it can't be, this is what I say to parents, avoid the consequences that say you didn't put your bike away, so you don't get to go to grandma's house for the sleepover. I'm like, there's no connection between the two unless they ride that bike
over. That's something we could talk about, and maybe that's a great topic, about you believe in consequences tomorrow on the Total Education Show, Jarrett.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
So think about that. You agree with the consequences, but they have to be related to the act that was violated. All right, so great show. We can't find any information with Jarrett except listening to my show. I hope that he gets a Facebook and a Twitter, especially when we are going to become New York Times best-selling authors, because once I get him on board to write his portions of the book, I will be on board. And he has more time. He just has to say, I'm going to do it. And we'll motivate.
Absolutely.
We want the listeners out there to motivate it because the man has such great knowledge. And so we can find information by just listening to my show. And soon the book will be another portion of it. But it was great that you subbed for the Total Education Q&A. We'll see you tomorrow for Total Education Hour and the Total Education Show. And we'll talk tomorrow, man. So take care.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
All right. That was Jarrett. This is a great Total Education Q&A. We'll see you tomorrow with some more great education talk. Good night, everyone.